My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Near-death experiences, or NDEs, are widely known. Some critical physical event causes a person to float out of their body, experience sights and sounds while unconscious, encounter deceased loved ones or religious figures, and move down a path, through a tunnel, or toward an attractive light. On the other hand, some deaths are violent and abrupt. Some traumatized souls shut down like an electrical breaker in a lightning storm. They don't move through the full dying experience. They interrupt it. Over the past 20 years, Father Nathan G. Castle, OP, has helped at least 250 people who died suddenly adjust to the afterlife. These victims of fires, automobile accidents, shootings, stabbings, and drownings came to him in his dreams seeking help. And although such contact was not something he thought about, Father Nathan has come to believe that providing such help is something the Holy Spirit has given him to do. Nathan G. Castle has been a Catholic priest of the semi-contemplative Dominican Order since 1979 and has served as a campus minister at Arizona State University, University of California, Riverside, and Stanford University. He has prayed for deceased souls since childhood and has helped stuck souls cross over for almost 20 years. He used his first book, and Toto II, The Wizard of Oz as a Spiritual Adventure, as the basis for healing of trauma retreats for spiritual groups and survivors of natural disasters. Father Nathan lives in a community of Dominican men and women serving the University of Arizona in Tucson. His website is nathan-castle.com. And he joins me this week to discuss his new book, Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Father Nathan Castle. Good evening, Father.
It's good to be with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. This is a fascinating topic. So, Father Castle, please share with us about your early life and how you received your calling.
Well, my early life, I was brought up in an intact Catholic family. In fact, kind of super Catholic. There were five kids and my mom and dad, and then both of my dad's sisters also became Dominican nuns, and they taught first grade. So I was, in my early training, I was taught about life and kind of cosmos by both my parents and my two aunts.
And what does the suffix OP mean after your name?
It means Order of Preachers. We were founded in 1216 specifically to be bearers of good news.
And that was founded by St. Dominic?
St. Dominic, yes.
Now, please share with us about the Dominican Order and why you were called to that order specifically.
Well, your listeners might know that in other world religions, there's some sort of monastic system, you know, like monks in Buddhism and so on. The hermits and monks in the Christian tradition go all the way back pretty much to the founding or very nearly after it. And then through all the way to the end of the Middle Ages, most of those were in monasteries that were removed from the normal experience of most people. But then both the St. Francis and St. Dominic at about the same time in the early 1200s had the same impulse or instinct or calling to try to broaden, create sort of a hybrid of a monk who was also available to people at large. So that's kind of our calling. I'm supposed to have the interior contemplative life of a monk, but the availability to people that I've had throughout my life. You mentioned my campus ministry career, for example.
Now, the contemplative life is about prayer and meditation?
Yes. And about listening, in particular, silence, and learning to discern the voice of God and discern spirits And I also, the Dominicans have a reputation of an intellectual tradition and of being very well educated, and that was important to me. I didn't, I'd always loved to learn, and so that was part of my attraction to Dominican life.
Now, when did you first learn of your special calling to help stuck souls cross over?
Well, in childhood, it wasn't presented as something special to me. It was what I was taught. That's what we do, that we have, that I had a mom and dad on earth and a mom and dad in heaven, you know, a family that lives here and a family that lives hereafter. And as a really little kid, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, I would brush my teeth and my mom would tuck me into bed and say my prayers with me and help me. She mostly, when I was really little, it was repeating after her. It was a series of God blesses, God bless this, that, and the other person. And they were a blend of people who were alive on earth and some people who had died already. So I kind of learned that there was a continuum. The fact that somebody died didn't mean that they stayed dead. It just meant that they weren't in a body and weren't on earth quite the way that they had been before. So part of it was all the way back to childhood. The more specific part started about 20 years ago when I was first contacted in a dream while asleep by a soul who was disturbed and was looking for help.
What was that experience like for you?
Well, I was asleep. It was somewhere maybe 3 o'clock in the morning. I was dreaming my normal stuff, you know. I'm a golfer, so I was finishing a round of golf in this dream. I was playing golf. I was with another priest, and we were in the 19th hole having a drink at the bar. But we were in the bar. There was this silent auction going on. You ever been to one of those?
Yes, sir.
I've run nonprofits most of my life, so fundraisers are just really common. So there's I'm in my dream at a fundraiser after a round of golf, and I look up and I see this horrible, nasty piece of framed art on the wall that someone must have donated. And I said in my dream to my companion, "Good grief, who in the world would give that to a charity? They should be ashamed." But it was so ghastly that it was like the shameful behavior we show on the freeway when there's an automobile accident. We all want to slow down and gawk at it. I crossed the room to get a better look at how horrible this thing was, and it moved toward me, kind of like, you know, how most of our televisions are on our walls anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, they're a frame on the wall. It was a frame on the wall, but it moved toward me, and inside the frame, a movie started to play, and it was of a guy on the radiator of one of those cars from the late 50s with the fins and lots of chrome. And he burst into flame and was screaming as he was dying. And I woke up from that.
And how did you get the message that he was asking you for your help?
Well, it was just so clear. I don't know how to tell you other than I knew right away that the first part of the material was certainly my stuff, but then it changed. This was not my dreamscape. This was not my material. I was being contacted by somebody that was in trouble and in pain. So I woke up from it, and I said a prayer right away for whoever it was, and then I looked for something to write with to try to get the details of the dream down as best I could. I just knew. Because I'm a Catholic Christian, I use the language that I'm familiar with, and we sometimes just call that a word of knowledge. You just know a thing. And you can't exactly say why. You know that experience, Victor, when you're in a room by yourself and you suddenly know that you're not alone? And over your shoulder, you just kind of know that somebody else is in the room, but you didn't exactly hear them or see them, but you just know. It's sort of like that.
Okay, and then you began praying. And how do you know that it was helpful to this person?
Well, was, you know, middle of the night. So I went back to sleep, and a few hours later, I got with a prayer partner. I was on a retreat with a bunch of other people, and one of the people that was on the retreat was a person with whom I prayed regularly. And I knew that she had some spiritual gifts that I thought might be helpful, and they in fact were. So we went into prayer together, found a quiet spot, and prayed about this guy. And we sat still for a time. And my friend said, "Well, whoever this is, he really would like to talk to you. Would it be okay if I let him?" So she had a gift that enabled her to do that. In common parlance, that sometimes is called mediumship. Mm-hmm. Inside the Catholic Church, that's a kind of toxic word, so I don't use that to describe myself or what I do. But I think of it as a gift of prophecy. probings for and to allow a person to speak. So she allowed him to speak to me, and that's when things got interesting. We met him and figured out what his problem was.
Is it unusual for a Catholic priest to intercede on behalf of stuck souls?
No, not at all. It's really pretty common.
So,
in fact, the month of November, all Catholic people are encouraged to pray for what we call the souls in purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
And we assume that our prayers can be effective, and we don't know exactly what people need, which is often the case here with people we love. Christmas is coming, and you might want to give a gift, but you don't exactly know what somebody needs. But anyway, I've always thought of praying for the souls as giving them a gift, giving them energy, giving them energy, possibilities, helping them along somehow. So I've done that all my life.
But in terms of a priest actually taking this on as part of their vocation to do this on a regular basis and get in touch and get the information about these souls, that is unusual.
Yeah, that would be unusual. I was talking to another priest the other day who we were comparing notes because he was sort of lonely for another priest to talk to about having these uncommon experiences.
And what does the church think about this?
Well, it depends. The church is 1.3 billion people. And so, you know, that many people is going to have a lot of opinions about just about anything. The most important thing for me is that I have a vow of obedience to my religious superior, my Dominican provincial. And I went to him some time ago before when the book was coming to be to make sure that I had his approval. And he gave me that.
Wonderful. My guest this evening on Destination Unlimited is Father Nathan Castle. He's the author of Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. And we'll be back with more of Father Nathan after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org, but you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Father Nathan Castle. He's the author of Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. So, Father, let me ask you this question. When we die, are we aware of the fact that we've died, of the transition?
I think most people are. I think it's pretty rare that people get confused and are not sure that they've died, but The population that I work with is unusual in that they all died violent, sudden, traumatic deaths. They were alive and healthy 1 minute and dead the next. And so for this whole interview, whole conversation, that's important to keep in mind. Some of the people that I've dealt with had some confusion about what happened to them. Sometimes that wore off pretty quickly. And then your listeners might be familiar with the idea of kind of ghosts that seem to haunt a particular place that aren't always sure that they, don't quite understand that they've died. But I think that's pretty rare. I think most people get it pretty early on that, yep, I can't get back in my body and I've died.
You mentioned the fact that most of the souls or all of the souls that you work with have had traumatic deaths. Yes. Do other people also get stuck, people who have been ill for a long period of time or in a coma or something of that nature?
You know, I'm hesitant to go beyond my experience base. My training is in sociology as an undergraduate, and I try to stay with the data. And the data that I've been exposed to is of these traumatized ones. And I've met a few that were confused about whether they died or not, but not most know. They understand that. They just didn't want to go through the tunnel or whatnot. They were just angry or they were stuck for one reason or another.
Now, how do these stuck souls find you?
That was my first question. You would suppose that, wouldn't you? People start showing up and you say, how'd you find me? Well, the very first guy that I got started with, I asked him that question and he just said, I don't know, somebody brought me here. Mm. And I kept hearing that again and again from different souls. And so I sort of quit asking for a time. That did at least teach me, Victor, that I felt like I was part of some sort of a team. It wasn't random, and I felt like I was in some sort of healthcare setting where my contribution came into play at a certain point when people were ready. I've also heard that one guy told me, he said he was told that I was sort of like a satellite dish when I'm asleep. Ooh. And that I could receive what he would send me. Another guy said, well, your consciousness is like a stream, but you still have to launch your boat. And then the final one said, your light was on.
Ooh.
So those are the different answers I've got. But the winner and still champion answer is that first one. I don't know. Somebody brought me here.
And in your mind, that's the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, and specifically, it's their guardian angel.
Mm-hmm.
The angels are common to just about all the major world religions. As a Judeo-Christian in that tradition, we believe that we each came here with a guardian angel. And even though the people I work with wanted to be left alone and isolated, their angel won't exactly do that. They'll give them as much space as they possibly can, but they don't leave the one they're in charge of.
Interesting that you say be left alone and isolated. I would think that someone who's transitioned would want all the company they could find.
I think most do, but remember, this is a pretty rare little population that I'm dealing with. Mm. Some of these folk died in really embarrassing circumstances and didn't want anyone to see them. Others were isolated even before they died. Don't you know at least one person you can think of who's isolating right now on this plane?
Absolutely.
Sometimes they just choose more of the same because it's familiar. Other times they're just so shocked or so angry or so something, or like you read from my book in in your introduction at the beginning of the show, that sometimes people are just so shocked that it's like a breaker switch in an electrical storm. They just shut down because they're overwhelmed.
So with trauma, as in life, so in death.
At least for the people I work with, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've dealt some with PTSD and with other people that live a kind of a trauma loop. They can't get a thought out of their head, something, especially at night. A lot of people that have PTSD don't like to go to sleep because they can kind of control it during the day, but then at night it takes over.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned how you received your first calling with that soul that came to you in that dream.
Yeah.
How did you feel about it when you first had that experience, and what did you do about it?
I guess the first thing I felt, it wasn't so important how I felt. I had a duty to help somebody that was in pain, for whatever reason I'm it. And in my priesthood, I've slept with a pager on the nightstand much of my life. You take turns with the other priests in the house for hospital calls, emergency calls in the middle of the night. So it kind of felt like that I was called. It wasn't on the phone.
Mm. And how did you pursue it after that first time?
Well, it took that first time, the prayer partner that I mentioned earlier, she and I met with this same guy. His name was Ray. It took us about 3 or 4 visits with him over a course of about a month to help him accomplish what he was trying to do. But in the meanwhile, others started coming. And so I understood that this was going to be part of a routine now. So I got myself ready for it. I got a notebook and kept it on the nightstand so I didn't have to root around in the middle of the night for something to write with and something to write on. And then that same prayer partner and I began to just understand that this seemed to be a feature of our life going forward, and we were both willing to do it. So we just kind of went with it.
Are there any special prayers that you used for this purpose?
Well, I believe that not every spirit is positive and helpful. I believe that there are, just as there are human beings who are don't have your best interests at heart. I never recommend to people to hitchhike, pick up hitchhikers. And I wouldn't do that in the spirit world either. So there are prayers that I do, particularly St. Michael the Archangel, asking him to stand guard over a place, Mary Mother of God, St. Dominic. I have a whole posse of saint friends that I call in before I even do any of this kind of stuff, make sure that we're safe.
And so after doing these prayers of protection, are there specific prayers that are used for helping that person to cross over?
Not really. The protective prayers are very important to me for my partner and everybody concerned. After that, it's really just a conversation. The method that I use is I read the text of the dream twice slowly to let it sink into both of us. And then we simply say with the person who is in this story, if you'd like to come forward, we're right here and you can speak through me if you like. Sometimes I'm with a partner who also has the ability to bring speech through. So we just ask them to come and make, to say what they need to say.
Now, you mentioned working with a prayer partner, who you also described as having mediumistic abilities.
I'm going to hold out, Victor, for a gift of prophecy because it's important to me.
Absolutely.
That word is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So sometimes they don't. Many of my prayer partners don't have that gift.
And then we get to the point where the soul is finally ready to cross or has crossed. Is there a tangible feeling or a sense when that happens?
There is. You listen to their story, and normally they take about 30 minutes just establishing a little rapport because we're strangers to each other, but we're doing something very intimate. So it's unusual, to be intimately involved in something, the pain of somebody's life who you've not met. So anyway, we just establish a little rapport, get some facts straight, and ask them what they want, and are they ready to move along? The question that most often helps is, can you think, Victor, of anybody that loved you who died before you did?
Mm.
Can you think of somebody that loved you that has already died?
Mm-hmm.
If you get stuck, ask for them.
Yeah.
That will calm you, and you won't be nervous if you're in the company of somebody that you love and trust.
What have those you've connected with told you about the afterlife? Does time exist?
For some it does. At first I didn't think it did, because early on when I would ask people what year they died or how old they were when they died, very often they had trouble answering such a simple question. It's like they had been outside of it for a time and forgot how it worked and would have to labor to come up with it. But I've also met people that pay attention to time. And I've learned a lot, because in the writing of this book, I had to decide to tell the stories of people that are kind of like counseling appointments. And I had a qualm of conscience about whether it was appropriate to tell them out loud in public. And one of my prayer partners said, well, why, they talked to you once, maybe they do it again. Why don't you just ask? Let's go into prayer and ask them if they would allow their stories to be used. And when we did that, we not only got a yes or no answer to a yes or no question, but we got a lot of follow-up stories, and they're in the book.
And do people find angels or guides? You had mentioned guardian angels, but how about guides waiting for them?
What the guardians are with them all along, and they don't always know to call them a guardian angel, and the angels don't care. all they are trying to do is do their job. But the guides that are either the ones that I've experienced are either the answer to that question, who loved you and died before you did. Sometimes people will ask for whoever the most appropriate person is. They just kind of leave it open. I don't care. I just want whoever would be right. And then once in a great while, it will go to celebrity, you know, kind of that game you might play. If you could be with anybody on a desert island for a day, who would it be? Sometimes people will, you know, choose some celebrity to bring them across.
Wow. That's interesting. My guest this evening on Destination Unlimited is Father Nathan Castle. He's the author of Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. Father, please tell our listeners how they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Well, we just launched on Amazon about 3 weeks ago, and we launched as an Amazon bestseller. So we're only on Amazon right now. We're working on a publishing contract and deal with a publishing house. So right now we're on Amazon. And do you want the website too?
Or please, just yes, please.
Yeah, my website is my name, Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, dash Castle, C-A-S-T-L-E.com, Nathan-Castle.com.
And we'll be back with more of Father Castle and Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over, after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Why should you volunteer with Meals on Wheels?
I never thought that 5 minutes could make so much difference in the lives of two people, but it has.
Drop off a warm meal and get more than you expect. Volunteer at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. Brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
The following is made possible by Dad.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling all over it.
The Dad Joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
Why do you have to be careful when it's raining cats and dogs? Because you might step in a poodle.
And kids that spend more time with their dads grow up to be smarter, more successful.
Can I tell you a cat joke? Just kidding.
And with any luck, funnier adults.
Why didn't the skeleton go to the dance? Because he didn't have any body to go with.
Dad jokes rule. So take a moment to make a moment and give your kid a laugh. It's as easy as going to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's really funny.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Father Nathan Castle. He's the author of Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. Father, we began our introduction mentioning the near-death experience. We often hear during NDEs, those who experience it encounter deceased relatives who predecease them and tell them it's not their time and to go back. Do family members who predecease us help us in moving on after we die?
I think that's very common. if you've done any, if you've been around dying people in hospice work or whatever, you very often in that last day or in the last hours, you'll have the, if the deceased is able to communicate or if the dying person is able to communicate, they very often start talking about, you know, seeing loved ones that have been dead for decades, calling out to their mom, for example, when they're, you know, she might have died 50 years earlier. I saw that. My grandmother did that when she was dying. So there's that. But then of the population that I am writing about in the book, very often family members show up, but not always. Sometimes people have reasons for not wanting to be greeted by somebody they know. They'd really rather be greeted by someone that they hadn't met yet.
Do we keep grudges in the afterlife?
Well, I wouldn't recommend it.
No, when you say that they'd rather not be met by someone that they know, in other words, if someone has, if there's been a perception of hurt or actual hurt in the living years, does that carry over into transition?
It does. There's nothing magical about dying. If you're grudge holding or you know, being unforgiving, that goes with you. Cancer doesn't, you know, heart disease doesn't, but grudges, yep, they do.
Now, do we remain with our deceased loved ones if we welcome them after we're there?
It really depends on what people want to do. There are so many options and so many things that open up before people that sometimes they choose to hang out with loved ones because they've been longing to be with them. My mom lived for 14 years after my dad died, and they just wanted to hang out. They'd been married 52 years and then were apart, and we're happy to be back together. Other times people want to explore and then they can do both. And then later they can sometimes learn how to be in more than one place at a time. But that isn't something right away. That's something that has to be learned.
Talk about the exploration. What do souls do when they're on the other side?
Well, like my dad wanted to, they did some travel. They had five kids and then they also had care for my dad had to care for both of his parents. So they were pretty late in their life before they were ever really free to just do whatever they wanted. And then he became ill. So they really didn't get to do a lot of that. So he explained to me that he wanted to explore around and see what was there so that when my mom passed, he'd have places to show her and there'd be things to do. They always wanted to go on a cruise to Alaska and never did it, for example. Mm-hmm. So he was looking for things they might do together when she passed.
And what are those activities that you can do in the afterlife?
You can travel anywhere you want to go, and you don't have to buy a ticket, and you don't have to pack a bag. You can go places by thinking, by you know, instantly being where you want to be. A lot of the people that I've dealt with get greeted by their whole family line.
Mm.
You know, imagine you know meeting up with all of your ancestors that died before you were even born.
Mm.
Were you in a house where there were old photographs of ancestors that you never met?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to you know Civil War days or something like that. Sometimes people are greeted. My population, remember, is traumatized, and so one of the ways to help them calm down is to help them know that they belong to somebody because they've been isolated. So one of the things that sometimes happens is their ancestors will come in a group to let them know you belong to us. You're not a stranger here, or you won't be a stranger here. We'll be your people.
There's a wonderful humorous story that I've heard about this couple that are both 90 years old, and they pass the same day, and they're met by St. Peter, and while they're up there, the husband smells something. He says, "What's that wonderful smell?" He says, "That's heaven's kitchen." He says, "It's open 24/7, and you can eat as much as you want, anything you want," and he escorts them to the, and there's just miles and miles of the most delicious things you can ever imagine, and the husband looks at the wife and said, "You and your oat muffins, we could have been here 10 years ago." So, yeah, I guess, is heaven in our minds, is heaven anything we can conceive?
I beg your pardon?
Is heaven everything and anything we could conceive in that way, in the good sense?
It's what you can, I lead retreats. I have one that's called Your Afterlife Bucket List, just to help people imagine what they'd like to do after they die, not before they die.
Right.
One of the things that I've seen from, I can't give your guess at, you know, guided tour of the afterlife, but I can tell them what I've seen through the peephole. And the little people that I've been provided, there's a lot of schools. When you arrive brand new in the afterlife, there's so much to figure out, so much you want to learn. And so there are organized ways to go about that, just as there are here. You're not the only one that wants to learn about a thing. There are others too. And so you begin to have a kind of a cohort of other people that want to learn the things that you're interested in learning.
Can we get our doctoral degrees?
I think so. The very first guy that I mentioned, the guy that was burning on a car, his deal was he wanted to greet his wife who was dying, but he said, "I can't the way I am." And so we had to help him calm down and get himself ready to be somebody that could be a greeter in the afterlife, like an usher, a greeter. And after he did that with his wife, he decided, well, I kind of like this. I think I'd like to learn more about it. And so he learned how to be an afterlife greeter.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That really is beautiful. Are all of the souls you help Catholic, or do they come from many faiths?
Oh, they're all over the map. I think of the 13 that I put in this book, I think there are two that were raised Catholic. But they're all over the place. One of them, one of these was, I think, Hindu. Many people that didn't have any particular religious upbringing or training. It's really, when you think of all the people that died today, I mean, that's that's the population that I'm working with.
And if someone is an atheist or an agnostic in life, is their death experience different from those who have had faith?
Yeah, I would say, again, based on the small sample that I've experienced, I always ask people, you do understand, don't you, that you died and that you're still alive? Are we straight on that? Because that's an important deal. So whether you believe there was going to be an afterlife or not, do you understand that you're alive after your death? So that's a baseline thing to agree upon. And of course they do. So that goes away, that a person could be an atheist who believes in the afterlife. Those don't cancel each other out. Mm-hmm. And then for people that are not religious, there's no, in the work that I do, there's certainly no point in confronting them with religious belief when all they really need to do is get from here to there. I'm just trying to get them crossed over.
The foundation of virtually every religion is love and love for one another. Do people get that sense when they cross over?
If they don't, that's why I asked the question, who loved you before and died before you did? Because these people are traumatized and oftentimes discouraged. They've chosen isolation. Sometimes they've been in a kind of a thought loop that's kept them stuck. And it's simple counseling. I've been a counselor all of my adult life. And oftentimes, in order to help people progress, you need to get them to think positively about something, because it's so easy to think negatively when you're hurting or feel hopeless. So it's a basic counseling technique to try to get people to think on the bright side somehow, think about true things that are positive.
So in essence, it's really spiritual counseling. It's counseling the spirit without the body.
It is. And I ask them how I can help them. What do they want? And then I try to use their own language to help them move along so that I'm not bossing people around or assuming that I know what's best. I always ask pretty early on, how can we help you? What would you like?
Mm. Do souls have form like our bodies in life, or are we etheric on the other side?
No, well, they have some sort of form, and they all acknowledge that it's not exactly what it was before. It's different, but I'm different, but I'm the same. And then once they actually do cross, they're very often greeted by people they recognize. It'll be their grandmother, but she looks like she's 30.
Ooh.
You don't see wheelchairs and crutches in the afterlife. They're people that come very often look like they did in their wedding picture, their military uniform or something like that. They'll look hearty and healthy and happy when they come to welcome one of their loved ones home.
Why do you think that's so?
Well, why wouldn't it be? I think I would like, I'm 62 and I'm in good health. But if I live here long enough and have to have some sort of decrepitude, I hope I wouldn't drag that into the afterlife. If I had a choice about it, I'd rather, you know, be healthy and active.
That's really fascinating. What about the relationship with God?
What about it?
What happens with our relationship with God when we achieve the afterlife?
It kind of depends, I guess. Some of the people that I've dealt with don't have a concept of God at all, and I don't feel like that's really what I'm being asked to do, is to implant one in them. I'm just trying to get them out of a ditch. I'm just trying to help them move along, and if they have a concept of God, I can help with that. The very first guy that I helped, part of the reason he was stuck is because he was taught that the reason that people die is because God takes them. And who the hell does he think he is taking me just when my life is getting good? So he didn't want part of God or the kingdom of God because God burned him up in a fire. So in his case, we had to kind of break that down and deconstruct it and get him to think, could you possibly have formed a wrong idea? Would you be willing to think a new thought about God?
Absolutely. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited is Father Nathan Castle. He's the author of Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. And we'll be back with more of Father Nathan after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You accidentally cut your daughter's bangs unevenly. Do you A, line things up a centimeter from her hairline?
Man, oh man.
No, sweatbands are so hot right now. Everyone's wearing them, like that basketball player and that other basketball player.
B, get spiritual.
Mom, where did all the mirrors go?
A reflection could never capture our true selves.
Huh?
Beauty is within?
C, look on the bright side.
Less time blow-drying, more time texting.
Or D, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
to... Ta-da! Twinsies!
I kinda love it. As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information, contact You Gotta Believe at YouGottaBelieve.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Father Nathan Castle. He's the author of Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. Father, before the break, we were talking about people's concept of God and the afterlife. And I'm just wondering, I don't know if you've had this experience or not, but for example, for those who are Hindu, do they encounter Hindu deities? For those who are of a different faith, do they encounter the image of the divine as they perceived it in their faith?
Did you read the chapter about Ronnie, the young woman who died in the tsunami?
Yes.
She didn't mention it explicitly, but I think she likely would have been Hindu. She was from India. That would be the greatest, likelihood. And she made a point of saying in her kind of follow-up after I got her permission to use her story that we asked her, what would you like us to say about you? And she said, tell everybody it's really not about religion.
Mm.
That you'll step, even if you died really tragically, you'll step out of your death like you step out of damp clothes, and you'll go on. And that love is more important than anything else that you can think of.
I think that's the greatest message you could deliver for everyone.
Yeah, and it just makes such sense.
It absolutely makes sense. You know, it's interesting that we talk about this concept of love and feeling love and unconditional love. Is there that sense of unconditional love once people come to understand where they are and what it's about?
I sometimes get to feel it because if I'm helping the person, if they're speaking through me, it's not just lending them my voice, but they're inhabiting me, and I can feel their emotions. And once in a while, I don't get to see what they see all the time. In fact, pretty rarely. But I can sometimes feel a surge of joy inside when their eyes meet someone they love. There was one person in the story I'm thinking of in particular in the book. Cheryl Lynn is this young woman that was paralyzed in a car accident when she was 24, endured 10 years of kind of only partially successful physical therapy, was in a wheelchair, dropped in an accident on her head and died. And she was just so angry that, in a short life you could have two tragedies like that. And when she finally crossed, it was because one of her physical therapists, who had been particularly wonderful to her, died before she did. And she swanned into the scene, and when Cheryl Lynn saw her friend Estelle, the joy welled up inside of me, and I could feel kind of her heart, and I'll never forget it. It was just you get a glimpse of that sometimes at airports when you see people standing there with a bunch of flowers. Have you had that experience where you kind of vicariously watch people who love each other be reunited?
Absolutely.
It's a little bit like that.
And that same feeling, we had talked a little bit about this earlier, that when the person finally does rectify their situation and make that final crossover, that sense of relief, is there also a sense of a feeling of unconditional love at that point?
There can be, although not always, because some of the people that I deal with are even in this circumstance are still sort of left brain, or they're sort of benumbed to their own feelings because of what's happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have been kind of detached from their own emotions because they were isolated, and so they don't always have a big emotional range. It really just depends upon the person.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any humorous experiences to share about your work?
Geez, there's lots of them. One of the things that I'll get busy sometimes, and I'll be my partner. If I'm the one bringing the person through, I'm co-conscious. I'm alert. I've got my consciousness, but I'm also allowing somebody else to be within. And I've taken to recording these on my phone so that I don't have to recreate everything. I can get a transcription made of a conversation. And once in a while, I can't remember, did we remember to hit the record button? And sometimes I'll form the thought in my head like that, and the person I'm bringing through will say, Father Nathan wants to know, did you hit the record button?
What else? Give us another one, please.
Let's see. Sometimes I get to deal with the saints. Because I'm a Catholic, I've called upon the saints since I was really young. And recently I was in a conversation, this one's not in the book, but I was, Mary, Mother of God, is one of my friends. She's very dear and sweet. And at least in Catholic piety, she's sometimes called Queen of the Universe, Queen of all saints, Queen of everything in sight. She's this enormous figure. But she's also just this sweet person. And she told me once in one of these things, she said, people think I'm some sort of delicate what did she call it? Delicate, pristine figurine. But remember, I was a hardworking woman who had dirt under her nails more often than not.
Mm. Mm. Truth. Absolute truth.
Yeah.
Does every soul you help...
Whoever right now...
I'm sorry.
I'm in my room, and I have a little statuette that my grandmother made of her, and she is a delicate, pristine figurine on the shelf, but I know better, because she's told me I had dirt under my nails more often than not.
Does every soul you help move on, or do they some... I'm sorry, or do they get stuck and remain for some reason?
Almost all the ones that come to me cross... It's just that sometimes they're in a group and that there's no rule that everybody in the group has to necessarily do what everybody else is doing. Recently, this one isn't in the book, but I was dealing with an automobile accident that was a result of road rage, and it was aggravated and it was ongoing. It was three Hispanic kind of farm worker guys and three white guys that were harassing them along the highway, and they all ended up dead. And the ones that, and I came and I would have helped everybody, but it was really only the Hispanic farm worker guys that wanted to take part. The other guys didn't want to.
Mm.
They went their own way.
Mm. That's interesting. Do we travel in soul groups? Do souls come in groups like that often?
Well, what I've seen once in a while, instead of having an isolated spot going off on your own and shutting the door. I have one story in the book of people that had in common the fact that their death was because they were in a car that got hit by a train. And all these people that ended up in some afterlife spot where they hadn't crossed over, but what they all had in common was they died in a car train accident.
Mm.
So they were a group.
Have you had any celebrity soul encounters?
I've had celebrities who come to help someone cross over because they were invited. That's been my most common experience. In the book, there's a young man named Eric who died when he was, I think, 23 or 4. He would have gone on for a PhD, but he was in what gets called a gap year. A lot of young people don't want to go, you know, a dozen years in a row in college. And Eric was in a gap year, and he was a brilliant young guy. When he was ready to cross, he asked for what his options were, and I said most people just choose somebody that loved them that they know have died, and he pushed and said, but didn't you kind of say in passing that it could be anybody that's died? And I said, well, yeah, it could be. It just has to be. We can't summon and demand. All we can do is politely ask, and the person has to, you know, show up. So he said, well, then I want Albert Einstein.
Mm.
So I said, all righty then. And we said, well, Dr. Einstein, would you come and help Eric? And then he appeared. And he didn't appear as that old man with the shocking white hair going in all directions and the walrus mustache. He showed up as a 30-year-old, like, brand-new professor.
Mm.
Who could be sort of an older brother mentor to this young man. So I don't know Dr. Einstein other than that, but I know he was kind of a hybrid of somebody with a, you know, huge scientific intellect, but he also had a sense of wonder. And he is popular among people that want to live in both of those worlds, that want to be scientific, but who also marvel at the universe and wonder about things.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Can you offer the living any advice to avoid getting stuck?
Forgive everybody, you know? Mm. Get over stuff. It doesn't matter whether people, whether you're right in your accusations, the person did really screw you over or whatever. Can you just forgive anyway? From the Catholic Christian tradition, we have Jesus on the cross saying, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Nobody asked him, you know, the guy was still standing there with a hammer. But I just try to do that. And if you can't do that on your own, ask your higher power, help me do this. I want to be finished with forgiving people. That's, I think, the most important one.
How have these experiences changed you?
One thing would be the people that I've helped, when I've had a chance to follow up with them a little bit, as I have for the 13 people or 13 souls that are in the book, they're quick to talk about how there's just no judgment where they are, and they're delighted that no one's making fun of anybody. There's no one telling you that you're not keeping up with the group, or why are you doing it that way, or get in here and do your share. There's just that judgment falls away, and it's changed me because I can form all kind of critical thoughts and sometimes express them or at least mutter about things. And it's not that that's completely gone away in me, but it's the volume has turned way down on it. I'm just not interested in finding fault with people the way that I once was.
Which is also about opening your heart and loving unconditionally. It really is.
Yeah, and having a kind of a unit of consciousness, seeing yourself in all people and seeing others in you and getting over, you know, distinction between us and them and the good guys and the bad guys and, you know, racial differences or economic ones or educational ones. You know, we're just together, that's all.
And at the end of it all, it's all about the golden rule, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's just real important, you know, treat others the way you'd like to be treated.
Very simple and very, very true. My guest, Father Nathan Castle, he's the author of Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. Father Nathan, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Yeah, thanks. We've made an Amazon bestseller, so go on Amazon and look for the book. And on my website, I am nathan-castle.com, nathan-castle.com.
Father Castle, thank you. This has been absolutely fascinating, and also it's really given a message of hope to our listeners.
Good. Let's do it again, Victor.
Absolutely. And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.